So January 25th was my first protest. I never cared about anything, you know, that had to do with human rights or politics or social justice in Egypt, just because I felt there was no hope. But January 25th completely changed my life. That now every day I wake up and I think, how's Egypt?
The invitation to the 25th of January event had a slogan, bread freedom human, dignity.
Aish Hurriya Karama Insaniya. Bread, freedom, and human dignity.
I'm going to fight for my freedom and justice, even if I will pay my life.
And we just hit the streets and talked to people and prepared for the 25th. And we were also preparing for this with Kolena Khalid Said page on Facebook. It has more than 1 million people as members now. We thought that we were all going to be, you know, just taken to prison on the spot. And we started as 100 people. And all of a sudden, we became 20,000.
Only
prison and torture and everything, everything, hanging, everything. And all of a sudden, it became big.
I'm Heba Marayef, Human Rights Watch's Egypt researcher. I was born in Alexandria and grew up in Egypt, and I'm now based in Cairo.
A day of hope in Cairo. The police weren't beating demonstrators in the way that we often see them doing.
I went to the protests every day. So I started making these voice recordings a few days into the Tahrir uprising at the end of January 2011 and continued into early February.
Marching in the streets of Cairo is always the ultimate goal of any demonstration, always a completely unattainable one because police cordon demonstrators off and start arresting and beating them. So the feeling of walking through the streets and shouting, Yasqut, Yasqut, Hosni Mubarak, fall, Mubarak, fall, we want you to leave, was an invigorating experience that I don't think any of the thousands of activists will forget soon. Is this enough to build a more sustained, mobilized movement in Egypt? We don't know yet. How angry were people? How would they have responded to violence? Would that have broken their political will? People were still trying to get in, but the riot police had completely blocked off the entrance. And as I walked out, one man complained and said, "Why won't you let us in?" And the riot policeman responded saying, "Come back tomorrow, there'll be more tomorrow." I think that's the big question. Will there be more tomorrow? But once you mobilize young people, they don't forget. And already my generation is far less apathetic than my parents' generation.
A few weeks after the protests, Human Rights Watch interviewed some of the significant actors during the January uprising, political activists, human rights defenders, families of victims who'd been shot dead. These are the protesters, performers, and Egyptian people who stood up for the country in Tahrir Square. The voices from Tahrir.
Everyone was there. Old people, young people, couples, families, young kids, toddlers, babies. Everyone was there.
All elements of the Egyptian society. You could see Copts, Muslims, communists, and rich people, poor people, people coming from countryside.
And I saw a conservative religious man with a beard talking casually about politics with, you know, a very modern-looking girl and feeling that they were both part of the same cause.
In Tahrir Square at night, I saw young mothers with their suckling babies under the tents, living under the rain and the cold, staying all the night and day there.
1 a.m. of the 26th of January, and the police became very, very tough on us.
Alaa El Aswani is an award-winning Egyptian novelist.
And we ran, and there was the gas bombs, and I did not think that it's going to be a real revolution. So there were young people around me, and I told them that, fine, then we did a very good job. Today there were more than 1 million in the square. So you go home, and tomorrow morning we're going to make another manifestation. And I was surprised. They were really refusing. No, we never go home. And I was very touched. I felt for the first moment, there is something I don't understand. This is a very different spirit.
On the bridge, the famous bridge, which is the Qasr al-Nil one, you felt, okay, this is the road to Tahrir, this is the road to liberation. And it was the day we actually managed to settle in Tahrir and create this Tahrir utopia, or, the republic, as we call it.
Salih Moore is a Coptic Christian. Muhammad Abbas used to be with the Muslim Brotherhood.
It's very nice. This moment, we said it's a revolution.
It's a revolution, yeah.
And this time, we make it.
And it's a Facebook revolution, so that's even funnier, I guess. Everybody was making fun of you, you know, who plans for a revolution on Facebook and who plans for a revolution on a specific day. There is no date for a revolution. And we said it was the 25th of January. We had a date, so it was the police anniversary, and we gave them a nice one.
January 25th was declared a public holiday by the Mubarak government. It's a day to celebrate Police Day. There would always be a big speech by Hosni Mubarak, and Police Day, for those of us on the activist side, sort of symbolized everything that was wrong with Mubarak's police state. The most powerful chant that we heard from the very first day of the protest was El Shaab Yurid Isqat al-Nizam, which means the people want the downfall of the regime. That resonated so strongly because it was a chant that we'd first heard in Tunisia, and it was about a change of the entire structure. It wasn't just about Mubarak, it wasn't just about his ministers, it was about the whole regime. The second big protest was January 28th, and the night before, the government shut down the internet and also shut down mobile phone communication.
On the 27th, after they said to us they will let the cell phones down, I thought that we will die tomorrow. So I went to my home and see my baby and saying to him, bye, we have the right to leave.
The more violent they got, the more angry we as protesters became. So when they actually cut it, I knew beforehand, because we kept hearing rumors every now and then that they're going to do that. So we knew that the phones would be cut off. And when it actually happened, I'm like, okay, you're giving me even more reason to be out there.
Yeah. You remember there was this banner from Anonymous back then supporting us, and it was, if your government shut down the internet, shut down your government. And it was really how, how we were.
The first thing I thought was just like, how scary are we? Or like, how weak are you?
That's it.
But ironically, you switch off the internet and mobile phones, people go to the streets, it seemed. Because how else can you look for people? How else can you find them except go and physically be with them in the same place? And so it completely backfired.
On that day, we needed so much communication, not to go down to protest, but to save lives. And guess what? There were millions of people in the street all over Egypt. And the police retreated that day, so it was victory for that day.
I mean, it was more than 100,000 on the 25th, even much more. And then by the 28th, we were sure that after the prayers, whether it's from the churches or the mosques, we were going to get big gatherings. And I think that was the time I felt, okay, that's going to be a battlefield. And it was actually a battlefield.
The riot police was not that prepared on the 25th to face this big a number. So it was easy to break all the barriers. But on the 28th, it was a true war zone.
they were shooting what we thought initially were rubber bullets, and we were seeing people just fall on the ground. And then suddenly we realized that there were snipers, that there were people on the rooftops of buildings around Tahrir Square that were just shooting people point blank. You would see, you know, a green laser light, and then a second later that person would get hit in the face or in the chest, and that's how many people were killed. And that was not targeting particular leaders, because there weren't any. It was just a scare tactic. It was meant to send a message that even if you're standing by watching what was happening, we could get you. No one is safe on Tahrir Square.
I saw one of the youth die in front of me because of the gunshots from the police. Being a doctor, I tried to save him, but it was too late. I felt kind of responsible of what happened to him. But meanwhile, I think that this was the right thing to do. So that was a very difficult moment for me.
When we were on the bridge clashing with security agencies, that was, of course, the scariest moment. We saw so much blood and so much violence, but we also saw how those security officials did not really care. They knew that what they were doing was not in the interest of the country. It was the people versus the regime. And the regime was, you know, guns and clubs and tear gas. And the people were simply unarmed except for their extraordinary courage and caring for one another.
When I got shot, I was in actually in the middle of Tahrir Square. All of a sudden, I found my eye just really hurts. I knew there's something seriously wrong. I could have lost my eye in an accident or in something, you know, minor, but I felt, I lost my eye for a real cause, for the freedom of the people. And I've seen the other injuries. I mean, my injury is nothing compared to others. So I swear to God, I haven't felt sorry once. What we're doing is much bigger than my eye or my body or myself. You're not living for your own. You're not living for your own desires, your own needs. You're living to have something positive to live in this world. So when you die, you know, you've done something. You know, I'm not just a person who just ate and drank and had kids and money and then died. You know, you have something of value that you're adding to humanity. بطلي يا مصري يا مصري يا مصري بطل يا مصري يا مصري بطل بطل يا مصري يا مصري يا مصري بطل يا مصري يا مصري يا مصري.
You are listening to Voices of Tahrir. I'm Heba Marayef of Human Rights Watch.
So I'm walking across Otterneer Bridge again. Communication is back, and the festive mood dominates Cairo, despite the wafts of black smoke in the background. It's only one subject that everyone's talking about. It's whether or not Mubarak has resigned. People are climbing on the cannons being driven around by the army, kissing the army. They embrace the army, and they hate the police. They hate the riot police. We heard gunshots around the Ministry of Interior as people were apparently trying to storm the Ministry of Interior. Three dead men were carried out.
I realized how big this is on the 29th of January.
Hossein Bahgat is executive director of the Egyptian Initiative for Personal Rights.
So on the 28th, we fought security forces. There was so much violence, so much blood. A day later, the square was completely packed with people. And I looked around me and I saw, you know, Egyptians of different ages, different religious affiliations, different social classes and political views. And even if this is only a first step in a fight that's going to last for months or years, I knew then that we were going to win this fight by the sheer power of our numbers and of our togetherness.
There were a lot of Christians praying for liberation, and actually we have a liberation mosque and the liberation church.
Salih Moore is a Coptic Christian. She and Muhammad Abbas, formerly of the Muslim Brotherhood, helped organize the youth movement in the square.
He said, as youth Muslim Brotherhood, they want to change the image of the Brotherhood as well. They don't want to be the scary crow anymore because they have been for a long time. So they want to be more open to the world, more of negotiators. I want to add something about the Christian church. Christians here in Egypt always had the trouble that the head of the church will tell us you're not allowed to protest. If you want to ask for something, you go and ask through the head of the church. So if you have a problem with a government agency or anything, you have to go through the church. And I think the biggest achievement of this revolution for the Christians in Egypt is the fact that they now feel, I do not have to follow your orders in politics, because church is something and politics is another. If I want to pray in church, I'll pray in church, but I'll go and ask for my demands out in Egypt, on the street, with the Muslims and with the rest of the Egyptians. So that's a massive change.
So I'm in Tahrir Square, and as far as the eye can see, the square is full of people, men, women, veiled, not veiled, beards, no beards, lots of Muslim Brotherhood, women wearing the niqab, people who brought their kids, people who brought their loudspeakers with them. I've been out on the streets of Cairo all day since Tuesday in massive crowds. Vast majority men, though lots of women, and I haven't been sexually harassed once, which is always an indicator that there are greater things at stake, because that's usually something that happens to you in any big crowd, especially downtown. When you're in Tahrir Square, you feel a lot more secure, partly because the atmosphere here is so festive, and also because of the things that people are chanting, the energy behind the Mubarak, Ya Mubarak, Ghur, Mubarak out, Zihina, Ya Mubarak, Al-Hilal wa-Salib, Ma'an. For once, people power did make a difference. And regardless of what comes out of this, that is a narrative which can't be taken away from us. I'm never going to be as dismissive about social media again, because I've seen how communication made it happen.
I think Khaled Said what happened with Khaled Said was one of the main incidents that led up to the revolution. I think many would agree.
Khaled Said was a young Alexandrian who was beaten to death on a crowded street by two policemen in June 2010. The brutality of this beating sparked outrage across Egypt, and protests against torture took place for the following months. Google marketing executive Wael Ghanem put up a Facebook page called We Are All Khaled Said, which used to coordinate and plan a lot of these protests.
It just went beyond imagination. Everyone on the internet started talking about it. People were started printing stuff, going to the streets, promoting it. And it was just, you know, if the internet have done one thing, it actually helping break the psychological barrier of fear. That's what the internet did, bringing everyone collaborating together, thinking that I'm not alone, I can be part of this big group, and I'll be protected.
Like, there's no way you could ever forgive the authorities for brutally killing Khaled Said.
Tariq Shalabi is a website designer in Cairo.
There are a lot of people who would come together on this page or on this case and be like, we need to stand up for this. It is because we are all Khaled Said.
ومن أول ما خالد مات تاني يوم المظاهرات كانت تحت البيت كانوا بيقولوا يسكت يسكت حسني مبارك.
This is Khaled Said's mother, Layla.
From the day after the death of Khaled, with the same in them, there were demonstrations calling for Hosni Mubarak to step down.
50 نفر.
But then Mama Layla continues to say, I would tell the demonstrators, don't raise your voices too loud. Don't make the regime upset with you. Especially that there were soldiers that were beating them up. They would come and see me, 50 of them at a time, and some of them would be injured because of the confrontation with the police. and I would take care of them, and I would feed them, and I would read Quran on their wounds until they felt better, and then they would go down again. And they would arrest them, sometimes for a week on end.
The first time I've seen Mama Layla, or, you know, Khaled Said's mom, was actually in Tahrir Square.
Google marketing executive Wael Ghanim.
She was crying. I felt so good. I felt so related to her. And one thing she told me is, like, my son didn't die. You are my son.
Zahra
and I spent the 2 weeks of the revolution on Tahrir Square among the youth in Tahrir, and I would often get on the stage and address them. And the camel night, our car was parked where the battle was, so we couldn't get to it. And besides, they were waiting for people to get out of Tahrir to basically kill them. Mm-hmm. So it was we stayed on the square. And I would go on stage and say, stand your ground, don't be scared. The worst that could happen is that we die martyrs and join Khaled. And they listened to me and they would all chant, we are all Khaled Said.
When Khaled Said died, we were all touched. I hate injustice and I felt like it's unfair that the people who did that will run away with their crime. And knowing that, you know, you are in a regime that does not respect human rights. And we wanted to make the case public because they're always scared of public. And the way they would treat the public case would be much better. This is what we hoped for when the page was created.
And that changed everything.
Hossein Bahgat of the Egyptian Initiative for Personal Rights.
So by 2010, when Khaled Said was murdered in Alexandria, and I'm from Alexandria, but I never thought in my life that there could be an online forum to discuss torture with hundreds of thousands of members, disseminating information and discussing ideas of how to mobilize against it. And suddenly, I see thousands of families, middle-class families, fathers taking their kids and their wives to the street, dressed in black and standing silently to express their outrage at the practice of torture. And without this and without the internet, we would not have had the police day demonstration plans that turned into a revolution against the regime. And, you know, the rest is history.
Voices from Tahrir were recorded by Human Rights Watch. Coming up, thoughts on Egypt after the uprising, when we continue in a minute with Voices from Tahrir.